Good morning. Mateus couldn't be here. He's in Brazil, and so I'm just going to step in and cover the talk. A lot of the work that he was going to present was based on work we started in Oregon, and that he carried through in Brazil. Bruno Cara is a PhD student of Mateus's back in Brazil. So, okay. Well, the situation with pear is that I guess if you think palm fruit and try to make these correlations or relationships to apple, it's quite different with respect to fruit setting. It really does not do a great job setting fruit, especially early on in the early years. It's cultivar dependent to some degree. Pear are self-infertile, so you need pollinizers. Most orchards then have pollinizers, and the key, of course, is to have overlap in bloom period, so the pollen's available to allow for pollination and fertilization, fruit set. There are the clear issues that would contribute to challenges, right, or reduce fruit set, like frost events and winter injury and all that sort of thing, bloom temperatures affecting pollinator activity, pollen germination, tube growth, etc., all the components of effective pollination period, as would rain and wind affect pollinators as well. In Brazil, where Mateus did the work, it's a fairly high elevation. It's the state of Santa Catarina, but the issue is chill. It's about, I think, 800 hours of temperatures below 7 degrees C. So not often enough chill to satisfy pear. So there are other conditions right within the tree, and probably in the U.S. the situation is that we don't have dwarfing rootstocks, and so we don't get the precocity and the early fruit set that you might get or consider when you're making comparisons to apple. So that would really be one of the major limiting factors. This is supposed to demonstrate, you can't really see, but all the excessive fruit drop. I really don't see the fruit, but when I blow it up and look, there's a lot of fruit there, so you can sort of imagine that. Some of the cultivars are biennial. Bosque is one. Comis, which I'm going to report on a bit, can be highly biennial, and that, of course, can have major implications on fruit set, nutritional, etc. So lots of components. I'm going to focus largely on ethylene and as one of the hormones that potentially contributes to fruit drop. And so along those lines, we were looking at AVG. And many of you know AVG is an ethylene inhibitor. It's pretty temporary, depending, but it's got quite persistence in pear, as you'll see. Ethylene plays a role in senescence and abscission, and so our interest was to look at how that may be affecting fruit drop. We're not presenting anything too novel here. Porter Lombard in Oregon, in Medford, did some work back in the late 70s and 80s and reported on the influence of AVG on improving fruit set of Comis. Now, the rates were relatively high. It was up to 1,000 parts per million, so we're going really far beyond, and there were a lot of negative consequences to those high rates. He did look at post-bloom applications, even though at the time a lot of folks were looking, or later, had been looking at AVG for different crops at bloom timing. Porter noticed that around 2 and 4 weeks after bloom, he had really strong effects. And so something that sort of he hypothesized was that potentially the ethylene production of pear flowers and fruitlets was really quite high in that time frame, and that's why he was having such a strong effect. But there are no data to support that. So it's also unclear in terms of what the threshold concentration of ethylene might be that generates the response of fruit drop. So there are other contributing factors, environmental factors. Many PGRs, of course, benefit from high temperatures in terms of penetration and activity. But there are also the considerations, and with AVGs, very nice work's been done to show the effect of high relative humidity on penetration over quite a long period of time, and re-wetting events. So it's not just the application time that you have to consider with a product like AVG, but it's the conditions afterward. Okay, so we had some pretty clear objectives, straightforward. The first was to increase fruit set, and we wanted to look at this in some of the problem cultivars, Anjo and Comis in the States, and where Mateus did his work in Brazil, was Rocha and Pacums. We also wanted to then determine, of course, the most effective AVG rates and the timing of application, and along the way get some information about what these flowers and fruitlets are doing with respect to ethylene, and then how is AVG controlling it. So a little bit backwards here, but it was Mateus's talk, and so I didn't really rearrange this slide too much. But again, we started the work in 2013. Mateus was out with my program when I was at Oregon State University around that time. And again, 2016-17 is when he worked in Brazil. So you can see the site he was looking at is a high-altitude site in Brazil. I'm not sure about the Packhams. I couldn't get the information from them, but the Rocha was BA29, so he had quince. It was a high-density orchard. Those trees were 8 years old. We did a lot of trials in Hood River, in the Hood River Valley, and so I'll report on a handful of them, but we had all sorts of combinations, so it really wasn't worth trying to put them all here. Treatments were in Brazil were 7 and 14 days after bloom. That's sort of what came out of the work that we had started. I had been doing work around bloom 7 days after, 14 days after in terms of timing. And we did variable rates. So we ran everything from about 30 to 120. 120 parts is roughly a 333 gram pouch per acre. And so we had the low rates were about 30 and up to 120. And so Mateus's work was in that sort of ballpark too. We did use a surfactant. I used a lower concentration than Mateus had used. All of these were randomized complete block designs. Some were multi-rep, some were single tree rep, so we had a lot of experiments here. Blocking was always performed. If it wasn't spatial, when we had bloom density issues, that's how trees were blocked, and that's certainly in the case of Mateus's work. Everything was whole canopy application. So for ethylene sampling, I owe quite a debt of gratitude to Yan Wang, who was post-harvest physiologist many of you knew, at Mid-Columbia Ag Center and at OSU. He did help me to do a lot of the GC work with ethylene. The way we did this is we collected about 25, sometimes a little more flowers, go out in mid-morning, collect them off a tree in a Ziploc bag, put them into a cooler, bring them to the lab, and then we would, you know, freshly cut them all just right below the ovary. We would weigh them because we're expressing this as a function of weight. And then they'd go into these 15 mil or 50 mil tubes as they started getting a little bigger. We have a septa on there, and we'd let them collect headspace gas. And so essentially we needed about 3 hours, especially early when the flowers were just developing. We started around 50% of full bloom, and it definitely required 3 hours to generate enough ethylene to have detection. As we advanced, the time we were able to reduce that quite a bit. GC is what we used to do the work, and of course we timed when we capped and when we pulled out with a syringe the gas, because we also express it as a function of time. Okay, so the first set of experiments was done, I think this was 2013, we did Anjo and Camis, and this is the situation with a vigorous rootstock and not too old of an Anjo tree, you see a lot of vigor and a lot of leaves and very few fruit. And the first year we did it, I just thought we hit the mother lode. I mean, this was just golden because Anjo has a very difficult time setting fruit early on, and you can see how that fruit controls the vigor of the tree. I don't know how clearly you can see all the fruit from there, but it was quite remarkable. The bloom timings very rarely ever worked for us in terms of improving, using AVG at bloom to try to improve fruit set. This first study was 40 and 80 parts per million, and we had a clear rate response, but nothing at bloom. So it was 2 weeks after full bloom. And it's quite marked. It's about threefold at 80 parts per million. Camis, we had a very similar situation in terms of fruit set. Not quite as high of an increase. And at bloom, with the 80 ppm, we had a slight increase. And what that looks like with respect to production, you can see here, that's threefold the amount of fruit. I never thought we could reduce the size of Anjo fruit because usually there's so many leaves to size the fruit. And you can see we tanked fruit size. I mean, 120 gram fruit, or 120 box size fruit's not acceptable in terms of the market, but that just shows you how strongly it worked at the high rate. Kamish, you can see really there were improvements along the way. You can see that 80 ppm at 80% of full bloom when we applied that did have a significant increase in fruit number as well as yield. The real effects came again at 2 weeks after full bloom. And that makes a little sense with Kamish. And in fact, Porter was on to this, and there had been some work that established that Kamish has a pretty poor ovule viability. So the idea at bloom for Kamish could be extending the ovule viability, which for those of you who are familiar with the use of AVG and Regina sweet cherry, that would be the tactic. We still didn't see the real effect really occurred later. At any rate, I thought we'd keep a lot of fruit on the tree that were parthenocarpic. Now, we don't have conditions for parthenocarpy, but I figured maybe there wasn't a lot of fertilization, and all those fruit we kind of kept on were had issues with fruit. It wasn't the case at all. The same seed counts as the controls in every case, which indicates to me, right, that pollination and fertilization is not the limiting factor in terms of these fruit sets. Okay, so what's ethylene look like over time in pair? And this gives you an idea. This is days from anthesis. I guess the take-home here is that there's 3 years of data for Anjo and 2 years for Kamish, and despite the difference in amplitude of these curves, it's pretty consistent pattern. And it looks like ethylene is peaking in terms of production rate at about 2 weeks after bloom, which really supports our applications at those later timings. Not too different from apple. The data that I could find from terms of ethylene generation in apple, maybe a little later, well within the range in terms of the units. So, again, AVG can increase fruit set via multiple modes of action. I discussed with Regina sweet cherry, it's ovule viability, so it's really important to get it on early. Monoecious crop like Sir Walnut, I think that was some of the original work with AVG and Retain. And my understanding is, peace? 2 minutes. My understanding is that this pistillate flower abscission was a function of pollen generating auxin and then the ethylene that came from that resulting in abscission. But what we're after is fertilized flowers whose embryos may otherwise abort. And again, Williams did this work in apple. I think this was delicious, and the major effects he found using delicious and golden delicious were 2 weeks after full bloom. So it's not too different from what we were seeing in pear. Okay, so here's what AVG is doing, and so you can see 30, 60, and 120 ppm. The red circle just indicates the shift because this is done at 50% full bloom. So when we started, this was 2 weeks after full bloom, the application. And there's a rate response, and you can see where we're at. No effect on respiration of fruit, which makes sense. It's pretty well targeted. And in this case, in this Kamish experiment, the only significant increase we had or improvement in fruit set was the 120 ppm at 2 weeks after bloom. We had nothing at bloom, which is what we've seen most often, and a pretty decent increase later on. Just to show my honesty, here's this experiment with Anjo, and to show how well AVG worked with respect to knocking ethylene out of the picture. And I got nothing out of it with respect to increase in fruit set yield or anything. So, I can't explain these data as a penetration situation because clearly it got in and we had an effect. The reduction from the 30 ppm at bloom and thereafter could be a surfactant issue reducing the fruit set. We've seen that with pear, and it may be that 30 just doesn't have enough horsepower to do anything for us. I'm going to wrap it up. So here's Anjo. 8 days after bloom, we can see the application and you can see the fruit growth rate just to show where those are at. This is another experiment. Here's what happened at 12 days after full bloom. We're really trying to narrow this window. And here's 16 days after full bloom. I figured we missed it here. This is great. And this will be the perfect data set to show why we had such a great effect. And here, everything.
So, folks, would you like Todd to finish up the rest in Dario's speech? I think we can. In the interest of keeping us on time.
Oh, you got another one. Yeah, okay.
Right. So we do have a 15-minute break. Why don't we finish this off and save it for questions later?
It's perfect.
Okay. So, sorry to interrupt you.
No worries. There's only 80 more slides.